Taking Stock with Carol Masser and Michael McKee, on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app, free for iPhone and Android devices.
Life is a highway. So is investing a little bit of a highway. Got to navigate your way through. Doug Cioka is going to help us with some of that navigation. He's Chief Executive Officer and Partner at Cavar Capital Partners, $375 million in assets under management, based in Leawood, Kansas, but he found our way to our Taking Stock studio. Good to have you back with us.
Great to be here.
Hey, when you heard Dave talk about housing and housing starts, and is that an area at all that you look at?
We do look at that, absolutely, as somewhat of a broader economic indicator as it relates to continued, not only reduced reliance on the Fed, to understand if they're still seeing a lot of people accessing capital for that purpose of larger purchases. So is that making the case that QE has been effective, or are we seeing not enough housing starts to think that the diminishing return of the QE in that area of economic concern is no longer providing that sense of vibrance and contribution to economic growth?
Does it lead you to an investment, though, conclusion?
I think a little bit. I think more than anything, it gives us an indication of people's confidence and of people's willingness to allocate capital for a longer term. It might give more of a broader indication of their comfort with their level of employment. Mm. We think that's pretty good. I think housing and employment prospects tend to positively correlate. And we haven't seen a lot of inflation. And we have seen it maybe in housing prices because you're discounting their cash flows at lower levels, so you're upping their actual value. But we haven't seen enough inflation flow through on a wage basis, even though we've seen a decline in the unemployment rate. So if housing continues to go up, that could pull product prices forward. That could mean that the transient drop in prices that Janet Yellen referred to this morning is just that. And we may have to have a little bit more concern about inflation in the not too distant future.
Well, basically, at this point, it seems like the measurement that we all have to watch each month is the CPI and the PCE price indexes.
Absolutely. And it's always interesting that we don't count things that we actually spend our money on, like food and energy, until there's such a dramatic drop like there was in energy over the course of the last 6 months.
Is that just stupid?
I don't know if I'd call it stupid. As long as it's consistent and we're not going to live by exceptions but rules, then we can probably make the case that the numbers are the numbers. It's just like people talk about the unemployment rate and they say, yeah, but the caveat is we have this low labor force participation rate. Yeah, but that's always been factored out of the actual employment number as they're forming monetary policy based on its direction.
So at this point, how are you determining what's going to happen? Or do you even really care at this point, whether it's June or September or December?
We don't care. We actually really hope that it is June, July, September. Right. I think one of the things.
All of those?
Well,
all of the
maybe. And I think if you see corroborating underlying economic data points continue to strengthen, then sure.
That's a good thing, right?
I would think that the Fed at this point is the only entity that hasn't validated the recovery. So if they begin the prospects of doing that and they do get the coveted removal of the word patient, then they then have that two-meeting window in which I guess they viably can act. So if patient leaves the script in March, then presumably we'll see an interest rate increase.
Well, of course, she said that that's not it anymore. We remove patients. We don't have to do anything within two meetings.
Right, but if they leave it in, they won't do anything. But if they take it out, they can feasibly do something. So I think that becomes the cover to act two meetings subsequent to the removal of the word.
How is that going to impact the investment environment? Is it going to dramatically when we start to do the Fed, especially if they do small increments?
I think it's going to have a very quick and swift impact on things like the dollar, right? And I think because there's so much anticipation to this point, one of the great reminders that we are served lessons as investors with regularity is these events are not binary, right? Mm. When we had the turn of millennium, that was going to be the ultimate in binary impacts on all economic growth in capital markets. The Fed is going to raise rates at some point, hopefully this year, and the market's going to have this realization that the world moves on. The market's going to have this realization that, yes, the diminishing return to the excessively accommodative monetary policy have existed for quite some time. We're not sure that QE infinity actually did any real underlying good to the economy. It certainly seems to have done good to stock markets. So if a little bit of that fluff comes out of valuations and people realign those expectations with a Fed that's in transition, I think that's a very positive thing.
And provides opportunities.
I think
realism or what?
Both, absolutely. And I think what it does is it also will look or require investors to look outside the confines of the U.S. for real good investment opportunities. This was something when I was the fortune to be on your program a month ago, we talked about our real focus on European equities.
We were talking before the break about the Fed. You sort of said their stimulus has run its course. Is it having no effect anymore? Because a lot of people say with inflation low, we should continue to keep rates really, really low at zero, and it will also help the labor market. You don't seem as convinced that that's actually going to be a benefit to the economy.
I don't, Mike. I think that inflation, in I quoted Janet Yellen earlier, is in a transient low point, just given the impact of the drop in energy prices. But consumers aren't saving more. The housing price activity we talked about in the beginning has been uninspiring. There's not been a tremendous amount of loan demand. So those should be some of the primary beneficiaries of this extended, extraordinarily accommodative monetary policy.
Is there not loan demand, or is it just that banks won't provide the loans?
That could be the horse of an entirely same color, in so much as you have both sides of the house, whether it's the post Dodd-Frank regulatory burden that exists that scare banks out of making into not making bad loans, whether it's cross-border exposure that brings in some of the consideration that the Eurobank...
Bottom line, it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen, and I'd love to see that you'd have a fiscal policy, and Janet Yellen was questioned this a couple times today by some of the senators, to comment on their job and why they weren't being more a better partner with her on the monetary policy side, and she certainly can't have an answer for that. So I think
crickets as everybody gets quiet.
Yes,
about
well said. Exactly.
I want to talk to you about, you guys are active in buying European equities, and that's certainly a theme that I feel like we've been hearing. We talked with Jim Lockhart over at W.L. Ross & Company.
Okay.
And he just came back from Greece. They have a bank over there, and they're looking. But I hear that drum being beat more and more. Talk to us about Europe.
Yeah, and to be clear, we don't have the intestinal fortitude to invest in Greece, so I give them a lot of credit. And I will say, I think if you remove Greece from the European proposition, Europe is in a very steep ascendancy. And that, unfortunately, is a distraction, but maybe it's cover for Italy and Spain and Portugal in Ireland to get in better shape. And as they continue to buy time, and maybe it's in four-month increments, eventually that will transpire, and Greece may actually go the way of the Mediterranean. But we'll see. But I think if you think about a few things, whether it's poor sentiment, monetary policy, tailwinds, dividends that are providing free cash flow distributions to stock investors far in excess of what's available in the United States, actual credit extensions. We've seen an improvement in credit, unlike what's happened in the United States over in the European continent. And a big one that doesn't get a lot of attention is they are net importers of oil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about how that's going to lower their production cost and enhance their margins. So we think they're setting up, and we do it primarily through ADRs, so there's still currency risk. So when we see a strong dollar, that can erode part of that gain. But we think that the dollar may actually be due to see a decline on a relative basis to the euro if we do see some continued underlying strength.
Well, the dollar hasn't moved a whole lot in recent weeks.
Right.
Do you think that the big move is over, or when the Fed starts to raise rates and the European Central Bank starts to do QE, does it go much farther, or has it adjusted as much as it needs to?
I think that there could be a couple aftershocks. Right? We saw the big drop down to the 110, 111 level. Now, like to your point, Mike, we're holding pretty steady at 113 on the euro. I think if the Fed goes ahead and either removes patience or actually raises rates, we'll see another leg up on the dollar versus the euro. But I do think that we'll see, because in many respects, and give the Germans credit, because they're controlling most of these negotiations, they're prospectively better capitalists than we are here in the United States, as their lack of willingness to extend credit and write checks that they know can't be cashed. So it takes a little more patience, but I think it's much more fiscally responsible, mm-hmm. so that when they do employ this QE in the tranches in which Draghi
begins stronger outcome.
To do, I think it could very well be.
Does it make a big difference to you investing in anywhere in the world that the dollar is where it is, or can you look past that?
I think it has to be taken into consideration, but I think in general it's a component, but it's not a primary driver of the analysis. We want to still look at growth rates and valuations. And then the currency component is something we're always going to have to contend with. And then ways you hedge that have to work into your models as well.
How specific can you be in terms of telling us where in Europe, though, that you are looking and what you're liking in terms of countries and sectors or even companies?
Yeah, so sectors, right, consumer staples, consumer discretionary stocks, some healthcare. We've shied away from investing in any banking institutions over in the EU at this point, just given some of the lack of determined exposure to some of the Greek credits. Mm-hmm. But those are the primaries in which we're investing right now, what we consider to be early cycle interest rate sensitive sectors over in Europe.
What's your take on the U.S. markets right now?
I think the U.S. markets are reasonably well valued. I think that's one of the reasons that we're seeing more interest in finding opportunities overseas. At 17.3 times, there's a great article in Bloomberg last night that talked about, well, we're at the stretched point, and the last time we were stretched, in quotes, was in 1997. And if you got out of the market at stretched, you missed an 80% move from 97 to 2000. Mm-hmm. Well, we think that the stretched piece doesn't mean abandon the U.S. It means have a more actively managed value orientation within the U.S. And that actually plays to the strength of our filters. It's very much a bias we have internally is to be value oriented.
We love having you come in. Thank you.
I love being here. Yes, thank you.
Kavar Capital Partners, Chief Executive Officer and Partner Doug Sciocca, $375 million under management, based in Leawood, Kansas, in our Taking Stock studio. You're listening to Taking Stock on this Tuesday. I'm Carol Masser, my co-host Michael McKee. Right now we've got stocks pretty much at their highs of the session, up 110 on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. This is Bloomberg Radio.
Taking Stock, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, in San Francisco on 960 a.m. and 103.7 FM HD2, and Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119.